This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yais Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
3 gendarmes have been killed this week by suspected separatists in Cameroon's northwest region. The violence represents a marked escalation as the unrest in Cameroon's 2 Anglophone regions nears the 1-year mark.
That's Moki Edwin Kenzeka reporting from Yaoundé. Full details coming up.
Also, Ugandan legislators want the government to ensure the human rights of workers who leave home to work under difficult conditions in the Middle East.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe says he fired Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa because he was plotting to take power. Mugabe's comments came in a speech to a cheering crowd of ZANU-PF party loyalists today. Mnangagwa served with Mugabe since he led the effort to end British colonialism in 1980. He has reportedly fled the country, but exactly where he went isn't clear. Political analysts say the ouster of his longtime ally now clears the way for Mugabe to appoint his wife, Grace Mugabe, as vice president. That would put her in a strong position to eventually replace the 93-year-old president. Several party groups have backed her appointment. Mnangagwa issued a statement vowing to return to Zimbabwe to lead party members. He says that Mugabe must understand ZANU-PF is not his personal property. Despite his age, Mugabe, the world's oldest head of state, is expected to run for re-election next year. And for more on this story, we go to our colleague Anita Powell, who's in Johannesburg. Hello, Anita.
Hi.
Anita, what do you have on regarding President Mugabe appointing his wife at this point as vice president?
Well, I just want to stress that no decision will be actually made officially until the ZANU-PF holds its party conference in about mid-December. It starts on December 12th. So right now, while there seems to be every indication that the president does support his wife, that he does want her to take the position, it's not over until ZANU-PF gets together and issues that statement, and that probably won't come for a little while.
What has been reaction to his intentions?
Well, that's a great question. Here in Johannesburg today, the head of the Zimbabwe War Veterans Association summoned journalists and said that they are fighting mad over this, not so fighting mad that they would ever consider a coup, but fighting mad enough that they're going to put up a slate with the deposed vice president at the head of it to contest the election in 2018, which, as you know, Mr. Mugabe is going to be running in.
Okay, and also, what does Mnangagwa and the ZANU-PF party, what does he intend on doing if Grace Mugabe does become vice president?
That's a great question. Mnangagwa put out a long statement today basically saying that he remains loyal to the ZANU-PF. But he made a very key distinction there. He does not remain loyal, he says, although he has been loyal to Mr. Mugabe his entire career. He wants to restore the integrity of the ZANU-PF. So one can read from that statement that he intends to put up a challenge to ZANU-PF. He will return to Zimbabwe, and he will challenge them. But as he said, he's given every indication that he's going to do it in a democratic, transparent sort of manner.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Anita, for keeping us up to date on these latest developments. That's our colleague, Anita Powell, live from Johannesburg.
Three gendarmes have been killed this week by suspected separatists in Cameroon's northwest region. The violence represents a marked escalation as the unrest in Cameroon's 2 Anglophone regions nears the 1-year mark. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's government spokesperson, Issa Chiruma, says 2 gendarmes were attacked and killed by armed men late Tuesday in the northwestern town of Bamenda. The killings came barely 24 hours after another gendarme was shot dead in the town of Jakiri, also in the northwest. Chiruma said armed men who had attacked a school in Jakiri to chase out the children, seized the gendarme's gun and used it to kill him.
The persistence of these acts of violence has become incomprehensible and hides the maneuvers of some people who cheerfully manipulate the population and especially the youths in support of a hidden agenda. Emergency measures have been taken in order to arrest the breakers, identify and search out their sponsors and accomplices.
Four schools as well as shops in Bamenda were burned last week. No one has claimed responsibility for any of the attacks. On social media, activists have threatened schools and businesses in Cameroon's two Anglophone regions that fail to observe calls to strike. There have been numerous arson attacks on schools and markets since the start of this year. However, some parents, like this father, Innocent Ekali, are defying calls to keep their children home.
There is no need striking and making children to stay in the house because that's like killing a whole generation.
The government reports that more than 40% of students have resumed classes in the major urban areas of the northwest and the southwest. Schools remain closed in villages where residents complain of mounting insecurity. The residents blame both separatist groups and soldiers. The crisis began in November of last year when English-speaking lawyers and teachers went on strike, demanding reforms to address the overbearing use of French in the bilingual country. Tensions quickly intensified as Anglophone separatist groups joined the movement, sparking a government crackdown and dozens of arrests. Large pro-independence demonstrations on October 1st left dozens dead and over 100 injured. Government attempts to hold dialogue in the English-speaking regions last month made little headway. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
In the Gambia, human rights activists are bracing up for a major event today. Vice President Fatoumata Jambajang Diallo is meeting with the victims of former President Yahya Jammeh. VOA's Pandarian Bai reports.
Council and mayoral elections are not due in the Gambia until April, but that hasn't dampened enthusiasm for the polls. Local residents and diaspora returnees have announced their intention of running for office. One of them is Bakary Baji, a Gambian who used to live in the United States.
There is no personal interest in this whole issue. And if it is anything, I think where I come from offers that. But at one time, somebody somewhere has to make a sacrifice, join the group on the ground to develop the country.
Mr. Baji was accorded a rousing welcome upon his return home by his supporters, mainly youths and women. He convened a press conference at the Banjul International Airport. His upon arrival, and announced he would like to run for mayor of the Kanifi municipality, one of the biggest in the country. Mr. Baji mentioned his concerns.
We know the major things here is about refuse collection, it's about not having good roads. It's also about people paying tax but not realizing where the tax is going.
Mr. Baji is convinced that with the judicious management of resources, the council can make many improvements in the lives of local citizens.
There's no reason why Kanifi municipality is the biggest in terms of population, but in terms of revenue, should be where we are. There's no reason why we should. And that's the reason why the young people thought, without any hesitation, that we need to step in, see what has been done over the years, and we also bring in our own ideas, new ideas, to change the status quo.
Hundreds of people are expected to contest as ward councillors. Some might run as independent mayors and councillors, while others will be sponsored by political parties. Mayoral elections in the Gambia are observed locally by non-governmental organizations, including representatives of political parties. The upcoming polls are going to be Gambia's first local elections since the fall of longtime dictator Yahya Jammeh. Mr. Jammeh was defeated by President Adama Barrow in the December 2016 elections. For VOA Africa, this is Pandarin by reporting.
Election controversies in Kenya and Liberia have raised concerns over the health of their democracies. Kenya's Supreme Court nullified its August presidential election, pointing to irregularities and illegalities. The opposition boycotted last month's rerun, which incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta won, but now there are new court challenges. In Liberia, the Supreme Court canceled this week's runoff election between the former soccer star George Weah and Vice President Joseph Boakai, while officials investigate claims of fraud in the first round vote. VOA's Adam Phillips reports on what these controversies might mean for the state of the democracy in Africa overall.
Ambassador John Campbell, an Africa expert at the Council on Foreign Relations, says the election controversies in Liberia and Kenya mirror each other in crucial ways.
What you have in both cases is an affirmation and behavior of the judiciary, a judiciary that is independent. And what that does is it promotes the rule of law. And the rule of law, it seems to me, is absolutely crucial for democracy.
But Campbell also notes that if there are perceptions that the rule of law has been compromised, that can be seen as a failure of democracy.
In the case of Kenya, this raises all kinds of questions about the legitimacy of the new government, or rather perceptions of its legitimacy. Too soon to say whether there's going to be a similar parallel in Liberia.
Jason Stearns analyzes African politics at New York University's Center on International Cooperation. He says concern over the elections in Kenya and Liberia and Africa's democracies overall contrasts with the optimism many felt during the 1990s.
Kenya became democratic in the 1990s. You had Nigeria. And, of course, South Africa transitioned from apartheid rule to multi-party democracy and black majority rule. All of these things came with an enormous optimism. Back in the day, Bill Clinton in particular hailed the arrival at power of visionary rebel leaders in Ethiopia, Eritrea, Rwanda, and Uganda. Now, every single one of those countries just mentioned, these have failed to give up power and hand the power over to the opposition.
Stern says the tilt toward democracy in the 1990s was partly an illusion. In his view, the outward signs of democracy were in place, but not its inner substance.
You had multi-party elections in many places, but underneath those multi-party elections, the fundaments of power, the bedrock of power, remained roughly the same, which was power was controlled by a very small sliver of elites, and that it was managed through a mixture of coercion and corruption.
In Stern's judgment, much of Africa's current unrest is an attempt by the vast majority of the population to challenge the system.
And say, hey, wait a second, this isn't serving us. This isn't serving what we want to happen. And so that certainly is the case for Kenya. That's the case in the Democratic Republic of the Congo today, where the president has tried to extend or has now overstayed his term in office, and you have youth movements bubbling up. In Burundi, it's the same thing. And so across the continent, you see new social movements, new dynamics popping up with people contesting the status quo.
Ambassador John Campbell is concerned that in Kenya, at least, the impasse may have more to do with ethnic tensions than class conflict. The incumbent, Uhuru Kenyatta, is from the Kikuyu group, the nation's largest ethnic group. His chief opponent, Raila Odinga, is from the Luo ethnic group.
And these two particular ethnic groups have been rivals for a long time. So what you've got is the possibility that a personal rivalry between Kenyatta and Odinga will spiral out of control and become essentially an ethnic conflict. I worry a good deal about that.
Still, there have been democratic success stories in recent years. They include Senegal's 2015 election, in which the opposition won the presidency and everybody accepted the results. In Nigeria the same year, opposition leader Muhammadu Buhari defeated the incumbent Goodluck Jonathan. And in South Africa, constitutional institutions put in place in 1997 have proved sturdy. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhi, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe says he fired Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa because he was plotting to take power. There is an escalation in violence as the unrest in Cameroon's two Anglophone regions nears the one-year mark. And election controversies in Kenya and Liberia have raised concerns over the health of their democracies. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Ugandan legislators want the government to ensure the human rights of workers who leave home to work under difficult conditions in the Middle East. The call follows the release of a list from Uganda's embassy in Abu Dhabi showing likely abuse. It shows that 48 Ugandans have died in the United Arab Emirates and neighboring countries where they went in search for employment. VOA's Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
The biting poverty and unemployment, especially among the youths in Uganda, has driven many to seek jobs abroad, especially in the United Arab Emirates, or UAE, and other countries of the Middle East. A new report compiled by Uganda Parliament Committees of Labour and Foreign Affairs indicates that between January and 31st August this year, nearly 50 Ugandans have died in Oman, Bahrain, and Kuwait. According to the report, the majority of them committed suicide. David Abala is one of the legislators on the Parliamentary Gender Committee.
You become the property of your boss. Not a human being, a property. Can you imagine 35 of them committing suicide? One person died because of cardiac arrest. You know, these are some of the things that come as a result of tension all the time. And then the other one is septic shocks. You can imagine, this is, there are two women who perish because of this. When you have a heart attack, forget, you know this, what this one means. These are the problems that we have. That's why we are saying a liver failure. Then there's one saying that somebody died because of drowning. How do you drown in a desert?
Moses Binoga is the coordinator of Uganda's anti-human trafficking task force. He says most of those who have died go to the countries illegally without government knowledge and aren't monitored.
Unlicensed people are continuing to hoodwink Ugandans and recruit them. When they don't have licenses, they don't have any concern about them. And most of them, when they reach outside there, they are suffering without having any way of being assisted. Most of them, when they jump to their problems, they don't get them. And they are forced, some of them, into prostitution.
Margaret Komhanji, another legislator, agrees that indeed they found many girls living illegally in the countries.
We found so many in homestead. They are being mistreated, others were rotting, but government didn't know about because they were illegal immigrants. They had not registered with the country, they had not gone through their immigration.
There have been a number of calls on Parliament to ban illegal labor to the Middle East. However, Parliament argues that Ugandans are free to seek employment anywhere. They instead want government to sign binding agreements with countries where Ugandans are employed for better tracking. Rebecca Kadaga is the Speaker of Uganda's Parliament.
Sometimes people are saying, don't allow Ugandans to go. How would you stop them? How would you stop a Ugandan from leaving the country to go to look for opportunities? You can't. This is a globalized world. They don't even tell you where they are going. You just hear that they are there. So we told the minister first to try and identify all the countries where people go and try and get into agreements, proper agreements with the government, so that they have a certain amount of protection. So I think Malaysia, we don't have agreements.
The legislators have threatened that if the agreements are not signed, they intend to introduce a motion to stop export of labor to the Middle East countries. Mwine Mpaka is a representative of the youth in Uganda Parliament.
So we have the view that for all those countries that do not have bilateral agreements with us, we stop exportation of these young boys and girls to these countries so that we can safeguard our young boys and girls to go and work in conducive environments just like other countries like the Philippines are doing.
Agnes Igoye is the Deputy National Coordinator of Uganda's Prevention of Trafficking in Persons Department. She has advised all Ugandans to thoroughly investigate the promised jobs abroad. She adds that it is very expensive to track exploited workers, especially those who were illegally employed, and to bring them home.
Because now you have to send maybe people to do investigations abroad. You have to do air ticket, contracted a disease, those movements. Travel documents may have been taken away from them. So it is more expensive. That's why we are saying that before you go, you rather remain poor. You know, they're saying poverty is relative. You can think that you're poor here and yet it is worse off there because of exploitation.
According to available statistics, there are close to 65 5,000 Ugandans working in UAE and the Middle East. Most work as housemaids, waiters, waitresses, security guards, and drivers. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Malawi may not be what comes to mind when you think of kung fu movies, but for young acrobats in its capital, Lilongwe, are out to change that. The trailer for their first locally produced action flick, The Town Monger, has been generating buzz online and drawn interest from regional cable distributors. The film will premiere in Malawi in the coming days. Lamek Masina has the story from Lilongwe.
The buzz started soon after the director posted the film's trailer online. Dennis Imani is the manager of the Kufewa Acrobatics Group.
It's not what we expected, and we've been overwhelmed by the response. And we have taken, I think, some time now just to sit down and trying to re-strategize, like, okay, where do we go from now?
Kufewa Acrobatics is a group of four school dropouts from the Area 36 township in Malawi's capital. The self-taught acrobats learned their skills by watching Jack Chan movies and videos of Cirque du Soleil. Abdul Rashid Shaib is a member of the group.
He says
at first they performed around their neighborhood. After the positive response, they started performing in townships, performing in the streets. In the process, people would give them money for each performance. Making their own movie seemed a natural progression. In 2015, they embarked on The Town Monger. Alfred Hambali, another acrobat, says the film tells the story of the challenges they have faced. Hambali says many people, even their own relatives, said that what they are doing has no future. But he says he could not back down because he had a vision, and moreover, these are the skills which God blessed him with. The 82-minute movie was filmed using a borrowed camera and a borrowed iPad. The young men leap, kick, and battle their way through the streets they know well. The action movie got mixed reviews at its first local screening to journalists. Shadrick Kalukusha with Worldwide Media was there.
What has impressed me the most is the setting, as in, at the beginning, when the movie was being set, it wasn't just linear.
Gertrude Abud with Malawi's Rainbow TV sees things the team can improve on if they do more films.
It never had a lot of dialogue that they can really grow on. It never had a lot of female actors. We only saw one female actor that we can also definitely grow on.
Several regional TV networks have expressed interest in buying rights to the film. It is entirely in the local language, Chichewa. Producers are busy adding English subtitles. The four young men are preparing to stage live-action performances of The Town Monger, and they hope to one day perform abroad. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe, Malawi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cornelius Tenner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.